Well, it's nice to know Radio Shack is on top of things.
Yeah. We were talking to two actors tonight, Ted Landers of Bradley Beach and Angelo Florio from Battery Park. And we want to thank, of course, his sister-in-law, Pat Florio, for reaching out and saying, hey, you got to call this guy. You know, he's my brother-in-law, but, you know, but he's really
an actor.
He's an interesting guy, and you won't be sorry.
And she's a great writer.
And she is a great writer and a great friend, too.
And a great sister-in-law.
Yeah, she's a great gal. Mm. We're part of the Tri-Muse together.
Mm-hmm.
Carol McAllister, Catherine White, and Gail Annenson. And
good group.
They're my good buddies.
And if I can just shout out one more.
Sure.
My daughter, Edie.
Oh, yeah.
She's 13.
Aww. Edie,
yeah.
Edie, that's a great name. Like the ice cream, right?
And she's starting Talent Unlimited in Manhattan for high school.
Mm-hmm.
She,
oh, what's
500,
that?
500, she got chosen. 33 kids out of, in Manhattan. And New York, I guess the five boroughs. It's a high school for drama. Singing, dancing.
Oh, what is it called again?
Talent Unlimited. So she got in this. She'll start in September.
So she's following in your footsteps.
Yeah.
Showbiz in the blood.
Yeah, I guess so.
In the blood.
I actually started when I was a kid in elementary school. I did my first play, Christmas play. My mother was into singing. She loved to sing, but she was too afraid on stage when she was a little kid.
That's like my sister Charlie.
But she has a great voice. And my father was an artist. He could draw, paint, sculpt. He was very talented. And I liked to show off when I was a little kid, although I was shy and still am. And I started acting in elementary school, and then I started singing in the doo-wop group. And Pat's husband, my brother Ralph.
Yeah, it's just on we never mentioned Ralph.
Ralph's a great guy. They're
your
a great
brother.
Couple. And they've been together a long time.
Yeah, they're a very attractive couple.
They are. And he sang baritone, I sang first tenor. And we sang with Joe Fatone, the father of Joey Fatone in NSYNC. In Brooklyn.
We
competed in contests in all the churches in Brooklyn. And I'm currently doing a show. I'm also a singer. I'd like to just mention my show that I'm doing. I did the Tribeca Film Festival outside the Family Festival. It was outside.
Yeah.
And with a downtown glee club in Manhattan. It's a benefit concert. This is this coming Thursday, June 16th, 7 p.m. at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center at 199 Chamber Street in Manhattan. And the program includes jazz standards, popular, doo-wop, show tunes, and the American Songbook. And tickets are available on the internet and at the box office. And you can go to www.tribecapack.org.
Tribeca, P-A-C-K?
Yes, and P-A-C.
And
P-A-C.
You'll be performing.
I'll be performing with the Glee Club, and I'll be singing a solo Under the Boardwalk.
Oh.
Under the boardwalk.
Boardwalk.
The only one who didn't
get the hook
was Angela.
I want to say you.
From the park, you can hear a happy sound of a carousel. You can almost taste the hot dogs and French fries they sell.
So much for my ability to sing. But you and I have something in common with the police work.
Really?
Angelo, because I played a policeman. Actually, I had gotten a New York police uniform, which were, at the time before 9/11, a lot of people in the union would apply through the mayor's office of film to purchase a New York police uniform. And now you can't get the items because in light of everything that's happened. But on Law and Order and Law and Order SVU and on Criminal Intent, and in a number of movies, I played a policeman with a New York police uniform.
You literally played one on TV?
Yes. And I also played They use me now because I'm maturing a little with the salt and pepper and everything, and the receding, or whatever. I don't want to talk about receding. But they use me as a brass cop now with the white shirt and the...
A brass cop.
And the...
The boss.
Yeah. I'm like a captain or something.
She's detective.
Yeah.
The captain. Yeah. No, that's different.
You got the wrong society, Maureen.
I got the shield and... And the collar brass and all those things. Oh, you know about shield and collar brass.
So, Angela, you started out as a policeman?
Yeah. In 1969, I was a trainee.
Too young.
With the New York City Police Department. I joined, and 21, I was promoted to police officer. At the time, it was patrolman. And I was in uniform for about a year, and I loved acting, so I also was very much against what was going on with the drugs and Vietnam, the whole bit. My brother got drafted, and a lot of my friends got involved with the drugs in Brooklyn, and so I went into the narcotics division of the Organized Crime Control Bureau, and I started buying drugs for the police department and locking up drug dealers. So between 1972 and 1974, I made approximately 200 and some odd buys out in the street in Brooklyn and Manhattan. And
That's a few. 73 to 74?
72 to 74, I made the buys. I was with them from 72 to 76.
What were the drugs du jour at that time?
Everything from marijuana, LSD, cocaine, heroin. I was buying pills from illicit druggists and doctors.
Oh, really?
Speed, probably.
Speed, methadrine.
A whole panoply.
And, one day I was on an operation that I had been on for a couple of weeks, and it was ongoing. And I was attempting to buy half a kilo of cocaine, and I was set up for a ripoff. They didn't know I was a cop. They thought I was a dealer, buyer, and I was led into a trap. And
can you explain a little? I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
What exactly happened to you?
I'll tell you something. I have a tape recording. It's very short.
This is amazing.
This is the first time I've ever brought it out in public.
Mm. Oh,
the
wow.
only people who have a copy of this is myself and the New York City Police Department.
Really?
And this is played at Rodman's Neck, where they have the shooting range, to train cops to realize that it doesn't matter how high the caliber of gun you have. If you don't hit the person the right way, they're not going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't go down. I walked for about 10 minutes. But this is an edited version I had.
And you
made.
Were hit with...
A 357 Magnum, point blank. First shot at my face, missed my head. In a hallway, someone was waiting for me, trapped me, cornered me. And then I jumped on him and he shot me through the chest, came out my back. The bullet went into the wall and knocked my heels off my shoes.
Wow.
And then I chased him down three flights of stairs, bleeding, and fired two shots at him out in the street, and he was arrested outside. And that didn't end my career. I went back. I was caught in the layoffs in 1975. I was promoted to detective, awarded the Combat Cross. That's the second highest medal on the NYPD. And everyone said, you have to get into acting, you have to make a movie, you have to write a book. So I went, I retired a detective with honors. I studied in California, went right into acting, started writing a script. I did write a script.
Based on which
is going to be made into a movie based on this tape.
Yeah.
This incident is the whole meat of everything that, it changed my life immensely.
Now, how long is this tape?
This tape is a few minutes. It's very short. It's actually much longer, but I had it edited in a studio. It's very powerful. So if anyone is weak,
don't
be afraid.
Down in the hall.
Tell
our audience.
But this is the first time it's ever been played in public,
basically,
and it's going to be used in a movie.
We're going to be witnessing a crime.
You're going to be witnessing a crime as it's unfolding.
And, of course, you were carrying the tape because you were undercover.
I was wearing a self-contained tape recorder.
You were wired.
Wired to get a good court case.
Right, because...
What a job.
Yeah.
This is what cops go through every day.
And now you hear what really happens. Okay, so it's 88.1 FM, and we're going to this tape, so just listen in. Live recording of a shootout that Angelo Florio was a detective at the time, and that's the first time he's ever played it publicly.
But stay tuned, that was an edited version, and there's much more. See it in the movie.
Yeah, and the movie's going to be called what? Do you know what the working title is?
Called, well, there's a working title, The Ultimate Illegal Experience.
The ultimate illegal experience. Okay, now can you take us through this now?
Yeah. Again, now that we've heard it.
Oh, we have a caller. We'll just hold that thought because we have to walk them through. Good evening and welcome to Restore Radio.
How you doing? It's Heshi calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, Heshi.
Yeah.
Were you listening to the show?
I can't pick you up here, unfortunately. Oh. I'm a little too far out of your range.
Heshi, can you call us back in about 10 minutes?
Not a problem.
I'll explain later. Okay, and we'll go right. Okay. We'll go to you in about 10.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry, hon. Okay.
No problem. Bye-bye.
We got to do this. We can't get involved in that. Hesh can wait 10 minutes, and he's a good guy. He'll understand. Walk us through that. You were undercover.
Right. I had been the night before. They were trying to get me to front them, give them the money, and they would go get the stuff. But we weren't allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. You're better off being shot than lose the money for the city of New York.
Right.
Okay. So we carried it over. I said, that's it. Let's call it, guys. And I left. So the next morning early, I went into my office, and we had an undercover room. And I was told that there were some phone calls, and these guys were, like, really hustling to get me to come back. So they promised me that the stuff would be there and the whole deal would go down and so on and so forth. And basically, I bought it. So I went there, wired, and the team couldn't come in, and they waited outside and drove around the area. And we're out front taking pictures of me and the guys. Got a picture of him
coming
out.
And those are the voices we hear at the end of the
tape. Yeah.
Okay.
That one police
officer.
They
got pictures of you. What,
going in the building and everyone going in and out for a couple of hours before, and, you know, they got him coming out. The gun was so big. It was a 2-foot Western Ruger revolver. He couldn't get the gun in his coat. And the money, he said to me, see, when I got upstairs, I saw a foot sticking out of the stairwell as I was approaching the apartment that I was supposed to go to, and it was his foot. He kicked the door open and came flying out and had two hands on the gun in a semi-combat stance, and I ran for the elevator, and the elevator locked, and I was trapped in an alcove approximately 3 feet wide, 4 foot long. And he said to me, give me the money. I threw my hands up. I had a .22 Magnum two-shot Derringer in my front pocket. I threw the money on the floor, and he thought it would be much bigger, you know. So he just said to me, give me the money. I said, all right, take it easy. Don't panic. And I said to myself, should I go for my gun or not? And I thought, not. So he just said to me, way to go. And he said a profanity, and he fired right in my face.
Ah.
Blast came right at me, burned me, smelled the smoke, big ring around them, and I jumped on him.
You didn't expect him to shoot
I
after you gave him the money, right?
Fire or not. And growing up in Brooklyn, you take a chance. I was in a few things, but never anything that I could never imagine, anything so scary as this happening.
Oh,
I couldn't fathom. I was told in the hospital if I was not in my 20s, I would have probably died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
I was in shock. When I got outside, this officer who ran up to me, and he'd been in 2 shootouts and, you know, really had seen some terrible things himself, he said that I was walking with my eyes up in my head. You know, I mean, I was in shock.
Well, you said when you walked out of the building, you saw everything was white.
Everything,
right?
When I walked out a 50-foot walkway after running down the stairs with no heels on my shoes.
And we could hear you, of course.
Yeah.
We could hear you. You
that panting, right?
Yeah.
Panting.
Because the tape, the recorder was tied around me so tight.
Near your lungs.
And the blood, you know, was coming out. So anyway, he fired through, and I was on top of him when he fired.
Exactly.
It hit me in the chest and came out my back.
Now this
fractured
was what?
Five ribs.
Below the right collarbone.
Right here. Right in here.
Mm-hmm. Maureen is doing a
scar.
Yeah. When it's a big caliber bullet, and it goes in.
Yeah, now we see it. Now we see
at close range.
See where it came out the other side.
But at 10 feet, that would have meant it's a rifle shot.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take a deer down.
Yeah.
You know, at a very close close range, a small caliber gun, if it hits a bone, mm-hmm. will ricochet all over the place.
Right.
So I was very lucky in more ways than one.
Yeah, that it was a bigger gun.
That
it was
a big caliber, the way it hit me, the whole thing just went down the right way for me.
This is the first time I've ever seen a bullet wound on a human being.
Me too.
It's amazing. It's It's so neat. It looks exactly like a bullet.
I still have loads of shrapnel inside. I can't have an MRI.
Oh, really?
But I have to tell you this. Part of what I went through was my 9/11.
Right.
I live across the street from the World Trade Center since 1999. It didn't have any effect on me whatsoever. It had a big effect on my daughter. She saw people falling.
Oh, my Lord. You've really gotten it.
So it did. But for me, I'm sort of like numb to that kind. But I can just say that the reason that I think my brother always tells me I'm on a journey, you know, this whole acting thing. And it led me to this room. On the way out here, I just like to say that I tuned into 88.1 and I enjoyed the music. It really relaxed me. And I feel that there's a reason why I came here. I've been on a long journey, which has led me to this place, to the Glee Club, to the show, back to my music. And I thank you for letting me come here tonight.
This has been a very unique show for us. Yes. I mean, my God.
And I must thank my mother for getting me through so many years of torment and torture. I can tell you, you don't recover from something like
this. Yeah, did you have...
I still am.
Yeah.
Traumatized.
Really? The post...
I mean, I look normal and feel okay and get along great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I maintain myself well, but you cannot ever get over something like this. It's not a day goes by. First of all, I'm always thinking of the cops. The NYPD, as well as being a member of all the groups and knowing all the chiefs who were cops when I was a cop. But they're a part of they're my family, you know.
Well, it's amazing listening to the tape. Is he calling you baby on the tape?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a tough guy.
Exactly. But you see the incredible humanity of him on the tape.
Bob De Niro heard this tape.
And he recognized
yes.
De Niro said, "Who is that guy? He moved me."
Yeah.
De Niro. Oh,
De Niro has
heard.
De Niro has a copy. He said, "Is this for me?"
Oh,
and I said, "Yeah, that's for you, Bob." After we shot Once Upon a Time in America, he came to where I was writing the script with someone. Took 15 months, and he said,
"The script, your own script."
Yes, my film script based on this event, and he said, "Why do you guys do that stuff?"
Yeah.
He said, "I do it, but in the movies."
He does it in the movies.
That sounds
like crazy. I said, "I'm crazy? You're crazy." He said, "No, you're talking to me."
So you did the whole thing, right?
So he's got his own personal copy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah. And I'd like to say another thing. When I was on the set of Once Upon a Time in America, I shot 2 weeks in Rome and 2 weeks in Canada, in Montreal, in scenes with De Niro, James Woods, Treat Williams.
Yeah, what a cast.
William Forsythe. When De Niro got up to act, it was the most incredible experience in my life, outside of my daughter being born. It was unbelievable.
And why was it the energy of him?
He's electrifying. He just, everyone on the set, including the director, Sergio Leone.
Getty Western, yes.
Yeah. James Woods is in awe. You just become, you start to imitate him. You can't help it. And he doesn't do anything to you to overpower you. It's just you start walking like him. You start talking.
He has such influence.
The cameras act like him. It's amazing. This guy is amazing.
I worked a little scene on City by the Sea when De Niro was in Asbury.
Which is the Asbury Park.
Oh, you did. And what did you think of him, Ted?
This is many years later, of course.
De Niro was not there for the scene I did as for a vet. I worked in a veterinarian's office.
My dog got in one of those scenes, now that I remember.
Wait a minute. Really? I was standing in for the veterinarian over on where the old employment office in Asbury was, over in Memorial Drive.
They were filming outside the casino, remember? And this was if we can go back
in time.
It
was so bitter cold that winter.
Yes, it was
you went over there to watch.
Well, what happened is they were also filming in Ocean Grove.
They were filming
right outside the casino on the Ocean Grove side, and my dog got away from me because he was quite young and he descended upon the actors. He actually ran into the kind of floodlit scene. They were very nice. I must say, I was very embarrassed.
Oh, my God, they were shooting?
I didn't see De Niro there. But they actually said to me, you know, and I've worked on film sets myself, and I know that they're not always the most pleasant. But they said, but they were very nice to me, and they said that they said, well, you know, we know these things happen, so we always prepare. We're going to shoot it again, you know. So we got my dog out of the scene, and.
And I worked with Robert De Niro and Meet
Why I told you that is that story. I have no
idea. I was thinking of Robert De Niro. I worked in the drag racing scene. Remember on Meet the Parents when Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro were drag racing in Port Washington, Long Island, that scene. Yeah.
And I think someone wants to ask a question, perhaps. Good evening and welcome to Restore Radio, or it might be Heshy calling back.
No
Good
more.
Evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Maureen.
Yes.
It's Ralph from Pat's Oreo.
Oh, hey, Pat.
We had a shout-out with you. Was that an amazing story?
That is tremendous. Did you hear the tape?
Yes.
Is that something?
Sorry, Pat.
That's okay, Ann.
Oh, I love you.
Very shocking.
Well, it is, and we just thought that you would really be amazed by Angelo.
Oh, we are.
I want you to write it, Pat.
He wants you to write the book.
I got about six in the making here. I guess I can split my mind a little bit, you know. For
yeah, you don't have anything to write about, do you?
Tomorrow's the conference. More reason I can't even get Sam stuff out for that. You know?
I'm so glad that you were able to hear the show.
Yeah, thank God, because once in a while, it doesn't come in on the internet. Your web page is down for some reason.
Yeah, but tonight it's good, huh?
No, we got it on the radio.
Oh, you have it on the radio.
Yeah.
Did you try it on the web?
Yeah, couldn't get it.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
we're not up on the web?
No.
Oh, rats. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I know you'll send it over tomorrow, but we want to listen to it live.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. It'll be up there. I've already got the link up there, so as soon as it is active, you'll be able to...
The orphan didn't call us to let us know it was down.
Yeah.
No, the orphan developer usually calls to let us know about that.
Yeah, every time we clicked on that page that says you can't get on. All right, let's continue your show.
Okay, Pat, thanks so much.
All right.
And thank you so much for hooking us up.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Pat Florio, very talented writer. You can see her work in Writers on the Water's Edge and the Chocolate Lovers poetry book, right? Chocolate Lovers, what's it?
Yeah.
I'm in it. I don't know what the name of it is. Okay.
It's Chocolate Lovers. It's based on The Weeknd and Virgin Grove. Yeah, and I've seen it, and there's some really wonderful stuff.
Great poetry and little short stories and recipes.
And
we have another caller. I wonder if this is the orphan.
No, hi, Maureen. It's Tommy DeSano. How are you?
Hey, Tommy. How are you?
Hi, Mayor. How are you? I was hoping I could ask the actors a question there.
Sure, go ahead.
I have a daughter. She's 11, and she's very into acting. She's done a lot of community theater, adult community theater around here, and then some children's kind of theater. And I'm hoping you can help out a dad who doesn't know how to help, or my son does baseball. Him, I know how to help, but having some difficulty helping her. We tried to get different agents. And
I'm sorry, Tom, how old is she?
She's 11. And we tried to get her to go to different agents, and it was always a situation where when we would go, they would ask me for a bunch of money up front. We always understood that wasn't the way to go.
Not the way to go.
Then we got turned on to someone who calls herself a manager. And this woman I've really grown to trust, because not only did she not ask us for any money up front, but without even signing a contract or even talking about terms, she's been sending my daughter on auditions. And I'm imagining when one of these auditions comes through and we get a paying job, she's probably then going to ask us for something. I was wondering if you can give me some idea of how it works. Is it usually like a flat fee or a percentage of every check, or what could I think?
I'll be honest with you. I've made the mistake myself of giving people money up front for a commercial a long time ago. And you never give money up front. And a lot of agents have a commission, whether it be 10, 15, 20%. That's fine. Give them their commission, but don't give money up front, because it's a con artistry and scams. And there's a lot of honest people out there, but there's a lot of con artistry out there. You have to be very, very careful.
Now, what's the difference with managers, though? Is that a different animal, Angela?
It's my experience of when my daughter's now 13. When she was around 10 or so. I took her out on a few. I didn't push her at all. And but they weren't supposed to have agents. Kids were supposed to have managers. This is my understanding. Now, as far as pay, I think that, I mean, if they do something, there should be an agreement.
Tom, you know, I there are probably books there when yeah. we were... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're joining another caller on the line, and we're answering the question.
Well, go ahead, Maureen. This is John Brown from El Pueblo.
I was just going to say, Tom, when we were coming out, I think we're all in the same age bracket here in the studio, there were no books at all for performers. I have a feeling if you could go to Amazon, just put in a few keywords, you will probably call up very good books on the subject and can tell you everything you need to know.
Okay,
do you get the show business papers and all of that?
You know what, I've been really negligent in that regard.
Yeah, backstage.
She's very young. I mean, 11 is very, very young.
Yeah.
But
And what about the high schools? You mentioned, Angelo, didn't you?
Talent Unlimited.
Of course, that's in New York,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's the High School for Performing Arts.
Yeah,
have you thought about that?
We're in the Freehold Regional School District where they have 7 different high schools, and one of the high schools is
a performing arts
concentration, and we happen to live proximity to that school, so we should probably go there. For Maureen's question about the difference between agent and manager, the way it was described to us, and actually I got this information from, Michael Liberatore's partner, Albert, he's a working actor.
Right,
he had told us that an agent basically gets contacted by someone like a producer who's got a show coming up and says, this is the part that I need, and the agent sends over a bunch of client photos and the like, where they said the manager kind of works in reverse. The manager seeks out folks, a producer who they hear has something coming up, and will come more on an individual basis, say, hey, I hear you've got something, I'm contacting you with this client. Take a look at her picture. I don't know how true that is. That's what he had told us.
And what about the price structure, though? How does that work, Angela?
I think managers get more money because they do more work.
They're working for the performer.
They look at the person
and they send the headshots and
the agent, portfolios. The agent is just a middleman. He's got the contact on both sides. He knows the actors and he knows the producers.
She got us an audition for a little Broadway play they were doing at Christmas time. She got us an audition for a Nickelodeon spot.
Mm-hmm.
So she seems to be shopping her. And I really trust her because she hasn't asked us for a penny.
That's
oh, really?
And if I might add, I know a couple good people in Bricktown, New Talent Management. Bill Perlman runs that, and they're pretty reputable. And in New York, a good place to start out with, in addition to the manager you have, is Actors Reps. They get 10% of the gross each time you work for them.
Actors Reps.
Am I allowed to give the number?
Sure.
212. I know Richard Brannan for over 10 years. He's on the level. 212-391-4806. And you could say Ted Landers recommended.
Well, thank you, Ted.
You're most welcome.
Tell me, how does this manager get compensated if she hasn't charged you anything?
Well, we haven't actually landed a paying job. She got, since we, you know, got introduced to her, she sent us on the 2 auditions. We didn't get picked. I'm assuming the topic's going to come up if we get a paying job.
I assume if she gets a paying job, the manager may want to sign her.
Right. Is that how it would work? Once she gets the job, then she's...
Be careful.
I would assume, this is not written in stone. I never had a manager. Most actors don't have... Well, I shouldn't say that. Most movie stars have managers.
Entertainment lawyer that you guys would recommend or anything like that? I should go to?
I don't know of any, but be careful not to sign exclusively with anyone, because if they're not sending you out, then you're stuck.
Right.
Freelance with as many people as possible.
Yeah, I think you could easily educate yourself through books. There's so many more publications now than when I was a kid. Take yourself into New York. Go to the drama bookstore. Go to the section where they have all these books.
Where is that? Where's the drama bookstore?
The 41st and Broadway. I'm not quite sure. They moved from their great location.
There's books down on Broadway, West Broadway, downtown, going toward Canal on the east side of the street. Shakespeare books.
Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And by backstage on Thursday, buy the trade paper backstage on Thursday, and get a copy of the Ross Reports. It comes out every month, and it has all the agents and casting directors that you can send your headshots to.
Backstage and Ross Reports.
And buy the Ross Reports.
Yeah, it's a little blue. Well, no, I guess it's different every month.
It's different every month.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Well, thank you so much for the information.
Thanks for calling in, Tommy.
Show.
Tommy DeSeno, DeSeno & Coons, LLP.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. John, stay on. Don't, yes, we don't want to lose you. John Brown from the Lobo Negro Art Gallery. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite well. And yourself?
The art and soul of the Jersey Shore.
Yes, that we are. Yeah, you're having a quite interesting show tonight.
Well, thank you.
I normally don't call in, but every so often I'm inspired to do so.
Well, good.
But
I'm glad you did.
Since the topic tonight is somewhat relating to theater, drama, and so forth, mm-hmm. I just wanted your listeners to know that the Dunbar Repertory Theater Company
uh-huh.
is preparing for their 19th season, and they're conducting open auditions Saturday, June the 11th, and the time is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's going to be right here at El Lobo. So if any of your listeners wish to audition, this could be for acting, it could be for oratory, dance, singing. We'll be glad to audition.
Me.
Yeah. you.
Hey, now, you want me to come at closing time? I can just close up the place.
Yeah. All they need to do is call, and that's the gallery here. And if I'm at liberty to share the number, I will.
Okay, definitely. Please give it.
Okay. 732-775-3300. Okay. And you call ahead for an appointment, and if you have a headshot, or you should bring a headshot and a resume if that's available.
Okay, Ted is taking all this down.
Okay, well, if you come down the street, because I'm working late tonight, you can take as many handbills as you wish, save your writing. And just be prepared to stay for about an hour, so that the auditioners will have a chance to thoroughly work with you in your audition.
Great. So you should bring your own music, I guess, whatever you feel comfortable with,
and right, whatever you would like to.
Will there be somebody to play the piano or anything like that?
I don't know if what. Dunbar, Darrell Willis is planning to do in that regard.
Okay. Well, maybe you should just bring your music along with you then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I would think that's...
John, I think we have another caller on the line with you.
Sure. Okay.
All right. All right. Well, good luck with that. Thanks very much.
Hello.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. Calling back.
Oh, is Hesh calling back? All right, Hesh.
Right, there must have been some controversy if I had to call back.
Well, actually, it wasn't controversy. We have two actors on the show with us tonight. One, Angelo Florio, was actually a police officer full-time before he became a full-time actor. And he had just played the tape of when he was hit by a .357 Magnum, a bullet from a .357 Magnum. And it was a live tape of what ensued there. So you heard the whole thing. You heard the gunshots and everything. So.
Wow, that must have been something.
That was something. And then you called in, so I didn't want you to have to fill in that, okay? So you're coming to town. Tell us quickly, because we're going to be going to our 9:45 interview.
Cool. I'm coming to town next Wednesday night. Show starts at 7 o'clock. It's in Long Branch, actually, at the Shore Institute for the Contemporary Arts.
We call it Sika here.
Sika, okay. And that's where I'm going to be. There's going to be two sets.
Great.
First set's going to be just me playing the piano and singing solo. And in the second set, which starts at about 8 o'clock, I'm going to have my old friend Izzy coming in and playing drums and percussion and vocals, and there'll be another percussionist.
Okay.
the name of Ron Melvin. So it's piano, voice, and two percussionists. It should be pretty cool.
Okay. Well, listen, will you be around for Thursday night? I know we have a pretty packed show, but we can always squeeze you in.
I won't be, unfortunately. I won't be on the shore, and I'll still be on the East Coast, but I won't be.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Well, I hope to get out to see you Wednesday night then.
Okay, please do, and I hope anybody who's listening, come along with you.
Okay, Hesh.
Okay.
Thanks very much. We miss you.
Okay, I'm sure too. You guys also, you're great.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Heshy, There's a Voice is his latest CD, and Reality Shock is the band. And so make sure you get out there to see, because there's somebody else on the line, right? Okay, we're cool. Guys, I could talk to you guys all night. we have something that we have to go to with council person elect.
Ah.
Why don't you wait for us? You know, the thing, we really have to kind of keep you like prisoners unless Mara wants to go and let you out. Love to have you stay. I know it's hot in the studio, though. Jim Keaty, you want to pull up a chair here? If you guys want to stay and hang out, that's fine. If you have to leave, I'll understand. Just don't go without an escort because we'll be in trouble with the alarm system otherwise. Council person elect Jim Keaty. Oh, I'm getting kisses tonight. That's great. On air
kisses.
On air
kisses.
Getting a little sassy here in the studio.
That's fine, huh? That was quite an emotional show. I'm speechless.
I know.
Really, yeah.
I know.
And,
your reporter instincts there have all kicked in, and you want to go on for another hour.
Exactly.
About this. And I agree
exactly.
with you. I agree with you.
You too.
I think that was.
It was just so
powerful.
Powerful.
And amazing. Yeah. I mean, he just Angelo just stepped out of the room, but the way he pursued.
He got up and pursued the guy. I don't know if we covered that. There was so much more to cover.
Well, the phone call started just, coming in at that point. But this man who was shot through the chest got up and went down three flights of stairs to pursue this drug dealer who had just shot him.
And shot the guy. So.
Amazing.
That's
extremely
that's
powerful.
The men in blue.
Yeah. Well, it shows you, we all pick on them when they stop us to give us a ticket, you know, and we get all our, this is what they do for a living, though.
Yeah.
Gotta remember that.
Boy, it separates them, The men from the boys, as we used to say.
Yeah.
Jim Keaty.
Hello.
We asked you to come down tonight, and I really appreciate this. I know you've had a really grueling day and night, and
it was enjoyable. It was packed, but enjoyable.
All right, good.
Even though I lost my game 6-3.
Oh,
it's okay.
But I know that there's some people who saw your email about needing supplies and donations for your soccer.
The Asbury Park Youth Soccer Club that started 3 years ago is going to be doing its third annual now summer soccer program. We're actually expanding the program this year, and we're going to do an adult an hour for adults as well. And that's going to start July 11th at the high school, and we're trying right now to raise the capital to pay for the equipment that we need. In most towns, you would get when people would sign up and register to for the program. There's sometimes like a $30 to $40 fee, even for recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what our economic demographics are here in Asbury Park, where we have the median household income is only $23,000 a year. We have a lot of people at or below the poverty line. People just don't have the disposable income to be spending on the recreation stuff. So we've got to try and find creative ways to fund it. Knowing that our city is currently in a budget crisis, what I'm trying to do is lead by example and find outside sources of capital to cover the costs for the program for the summer. I've had some people have responded, and we've gotten some cash donations already.
We also have
some people who are willing to volunteer. We're going to need about 20 volunteers for coaches, so if people are interested in that, they can email me. I have my new city email address. It's jwkeady, K-E-A-D-Y, @cityofasburypark.com.
Okay.
So that's the one exciting thing that we've happened. And there is a lot, one of the big things that people talked to me about when I was on the campaign trail was recreation. And we actually do have a lot of stuff in the pipeline for this summer. As I'm continuing to do my homework about
what needs to be done and how I can best serve the city as a council person.
We should explain your council-elect, yep. Which means that you're going to assume the position of full-time council person as of July 1.
Yep. We have a major communications problem in the city. You know, whether it's good stuff that's going on that not enough people know about, or people perceive there's bad stuff that's going on, or they don't think anything's going on and they assume the worst, when a lot of it is just lack of communication.
Yeah, which is why we started this show.
Sure.
Actually.
And, you know, when I sat down with someone from our social services department who was working on the recreation stuff, we've got like 20 summer programs in the pipeline that are going to go off this summer. The only means they were utilizing to advertise those were the city's website.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And it's just it's just not the best means, particularly given the demographics of our city. We've got to utilize other means to communicate what's happening here.
So we do have an active program, just
sure.
not enough information.
We've got to tighten it up, and we've got to do more promotions. And we do have to add programming. One of the big things that we are going to have to add for the summer is evening programming. There's a real gap in evening programming, particularly for our teenagers.
Oh,
so if there are people out there who are listening that are involved with nonprofits, or if they're involved in churches in town, just things that, like, we used to do as kids, like organize and throw a dance at your church.
Ah.
It gets kids off the streets doing something positive for
a
few hours.
Dances,
of course, you loved it, right?
You never hear about that anymore.
And you still will if we get these stuff,
no,
right?
You're absolutely right.
I guess the coffee, the chaperone.
So what we need to have happen on a number of fronts.
We have somebody calling in. Maybe they want to volunteer.
Oh, let's hope so.
Good evening. Welcome to Restore Radio. You're on the air.
Hi, Maureen and Maura and Jim. This is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
How you doing?
Okay.
Great.
Great show. Listen, the Stephen Crane House would like to donate $100.
Thank you very much.
To your soccer program. Because, you know, Stephen was a great sportsman and played sports right here in Asbury Park back in the late 1880s. If you would tell me, who do we make the check out to and who do we send it to?
Frank, I'm actually still working out the details on that. I believe it'll be an account that's set up through the city. I'm waiting to hear back. Hopefully tomorrow I'll have that answer, but I certainly know how to get in touch with you.
Okay, great.
And I'll reach out to you either tomorrow or early next week.
Very good. Well, I'll get off the line and let you guys proceed.
Thank you very much.
Right. Frank, maybe you might have some programs that you could do at the Crane House.
Well, we'd love to do
get
that.
The kids off the street at night, yeah?
Whatever we can do, as long as it's okay with the fire marshal.
You know,
that's right.
Frank, one of the things that my company is interested in doing, Educating for Justice, and maybe this is where we can partner, because I know you have a nice little venue there. We wanted to do like a social justice film series.
It'd be lovely.
And we can maybe do that through the summer. So that'll be something else that I'll touch base with you about early next week.
We will definitely talk about it, and any community group that wants to use it, just let me know, and if it's okay within the law, we'll do it.
Sounds great.
All right.
Very exciting.
Thanks so much. Great show.
Thanks, Frank.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
You know, Maureen, Frank,
Italian man.
Frank mentioned, you know, if it's within the fire code. And that's another thing. A lot of people, when I was on the campaign trail, were talking about the firehouse and do we need to have full-time firemen. And I went for a tour of the firehouse the other day,
mm-hmm.
and what an amazing group of civil servants. Just we're so open and excited that somebody from, you know, and I'm not even a council person yet, but a council person elect wanted to come over, wanted to see what was going on, wanted to find out ways that we could help. And again, one of the big issues is for them to communicate what it is they're doing and how they're doing it and why they're doing it. You know, I had no idea that the Asbury Park Firehouse was, I think, the busiest firehouse in the state of New Jersey.
Is that right?
And, yeah, there's, like, this kind of information we need to be sharing with people.
Yeah, exactly.
Which kind of brings me to the issue that you'd asked me to come in tonight about the summer jobs initiative.
The jobs, right. If you could fill us in on the background on that.
A few weeks back, in mid-May, the city council passed a resolution that they would commit to helping to support an initiative to try and create 500 employment opportunities for the city's youth for summer employment. Now, I think that some mistakes were made, both on the part of the city and on the part of the activists that brought the issue to the table.
Mm-hmm.
We can't focus on those. It's water under the bridge. It's done. we still got a looming deadline of June 15th that we were shooting for to try and create 500 employment opportunities.
And this is what the group set, this June 15th date, right?
Yeah.
Because that gives people...
It's when the kids get out of school.
Is it the 15th? It's not the 20th. It's the 15th.
Well, it was kind of...
gives like a week.
Yeah, it gives a couple of days there. So... Mm-hmm. What we're doing now, I had a conversation with our city manager today, and we've been emailing each other throughout the last week and having some phone conversations. We're going to take a very quick step backwards, reorganize, and hopefully by early next week, according to what the city manager shared with me, the city government will be appointing members to what is now going to be called the community board that will function similar to the UEZ board. And this community board is going to work in coordination with Tamara Richardson from the Asbury Works program.
Right.
And then ultimately with Tom Gilmore, the director of commerce. Now, in doing this and taking this kind of action and putting this board at the service of Tamara Richardson and Tom Gilmore, now we've created a chain of command, a clear structure, and most importantly, there's accountability. It's going to flow up and it's going to flow down.
Okay.
So,
I should mention too that the All People's Movement is on. Is that the major activist group that's been involved in this?
That's been the group that really, I think, brought this to the forefront of the attention of the citizens and the city government. And I think they did a good job in that regard, really kind of waking people up and saying we got to do something.
And they did call me too. Two people from there called me yesterday. I did try and get back to both of them, so
yeah.
I just want them to know that.
So here's what we're going to need. This is, if we're going to make this happen, and we may not reach our goal on June 15th, but we've got to push to try and do as much as we can as quickly as we can. If you're a local business owner in town and you need part-time workers, we need to hear from you. And people can I'll say they can call me for the moment because I can't remember Tamara's number off the top of my head. So they can call me in my office. The number is 732-988-7322. And again, my email is jwkeady, K-E-A-D-Y, at cityofasburypark.com. I just had a conversation tonight with John Dory, and I happened to stop by his place after my soccer game tonight.
Looks like you put the name Harry's back up.
He's going to have Harry's is going to be in the little bar that's on the side, and then there'll be Zio's, the Italian restaurant, on the other side. And John is ready to hire some kids as soon as they open.
Well, that's good news.
That's another thing that we're going to need. We're going to need volunteers. Who will go out and really hit the pavement and talk to Asbury business owners and hopefully share passion and excitement about the fact that we've got to plug our kids into part-time employment opportunities. So if you're interested in volunteering and helping in that regard, one of the things we were able to do in these meetings that we'd had to this point was create some materials for people to go out with. We need to start doing that. We needed to start doing it a week ago.
Okay.
We got to get after it starting tomorrow. So, again, if you're interested in volunteering, maybe an hour out of your week to go out and just talk to business owners in town and really push them to hire some of our kids, we got the materials. Again, people can contact.
The materials are done now?
They're ready to go. We have a letter from the city manager. We do have to tweak a flyer a little bit, but with a letter from the city manager, people can go out.
We have two callers on the line now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry? Okay, we're going to go with one first. Okay, good evening. Welcome to Restore Radio. You're on the air, and we're very short on time, so.
Yeah, okay. All right. Maria John, BMW.
I'm sorry. You're both talking at the same time now.
You're short of time, so we can both speak and get it over. This is John again. I'd consider taking a youngster for the summer.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, we're going to do this right on the air tonight.
I'm sorry, John.
John Brown.
John Brown.
El Lobo Negro Art Gallery.
Gallery of the Art.
Gallery of the Art.
Art sold in Jersey Shore.
Okay.
right.
John, I will. I'll have Tamara get in touch with you either tomorrow or sometime early next week.
Very good.
Great. Thank you very much for helping out the city.
No problem.
And that's 775-3300.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks very much, John. And who else is on there?
This is Jim from BMW. First, I want to thank Jim Keady for everything he's done for me. He's one of the reasons why that flag's flying over there in the Convention Hall. So are you, Maureen.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, John Dorian, too, for Harry.
Mm-hmm.
I was told today by the city, Don Salmon, there's been a loading zone there. There's several from day one.
Uh-huh.
Where Harry's first opened up. The city should have had enforced that a long time ago.
Yeah, you know, Jim,
Jim Keeney and Ed Johnson are the only ones only two ever got back with me on this.
Yeah, Jim, I actually spoke to John about tonight when I saw him on the way to my soccer game. I pulled over and I said, "Look, we got to get your loading zone squared away."
He has one, and they just don't have a sign on.
Yeah, and he said no problem. Do whatever you got to do. So okay.
I spoke with Lou Jordan about it today. He told Public Works to get over there and put a sign up.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had one there from day one. It's a shame that John Dorian, we had our differences, but it's a shame John Dorian didn't have one from day one. I'll let you know.
Thanks, Jim, because we're running out of time.
Okay,
we've got to resolve and wrap this up now.
Okay.
Thanks very much,
good night,
Jim.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's the flag man.
Yeah. So,
Jim Grape.
Some of the other things that that we need, Maureen, if people know business owners outside of Asbury Park, you know, anywhere from Point Pleasant to Red Bank, you know, kids can get on a train. We can teach them how to do that if they don't know how.
They can
get on their bicycles. When I was a kid growing up, not too far from here, I rode my bike to Seagirt, to my job. There's no reason that our kids can't be doing that.
Now, what about the training? Because it was brought up at these meetings, too, that, you know, you can't just send them out there if they don't know the culture,
I think what we're going to need to do, I know we've got kids, because I coach some of them at the high school, who are ready to go into the job sector right now. You know, they can, and that's one of the things that I'm going to work with John. I want to get some of my soccer players from the high school, you know, working in the kitchen as busboys and learning the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. Who knows? One of them might become a restaurant owner someday. There's going to be other kids that are going to need training. And this is where the first thing we've got to do, and this was the next thing on the list.
Yeah.
If you know kids in your neighborhood, if you're a parent, if you have, you know, nieces and nephews.
Kids who need training kids who are already
kids, the first thing we need is kids who want to get a job this summer.
Okay.
If they do, we need to get them to Tamara's office, get them in the database, and then we'll start figuring out, do they have any job experience, have they gone through a training, and we can start to mark them into different groups, and then as opportunities arise, we can plug people in to those opportunities.
Okay, and we have a caller. This is going to have to be the last one for the night. Good evening. Welcome to Restore Radio.
Good evening, Maureen. Steve Fitzpatrick from Red Bank.
Hiya, Steve.
Hey, glad to be able to get in before the end of the show tonight. And Jimmy Keady and I actually know each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we coached together at St. Rose. He was coaching the boys.
Oh, yeah.
The girls. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing good. Good to hear from you.
Small world.
Certainly.
Right, Maureen?
It definitely is. We haven't gotten you down the studio yet, but we feel like we know you.
Well, you should. Anyway, he hit the nail on the head. Two things before I forget. His plug for the Asbury Park Fire Department is right on the money. One of the reasons why they're so busy is that they do a tremendous amount of the EMS runs in the city.
Yeah, I was shocked at the amount of EMS runs that they do.
So per capita, for a city of that size, for the amount of men that they have, actually they're slightly understaffed.
Yep.
So instead of looking in the direction of going all volunteer, you should be actually adding more people as the town begins to build up.
Okay. Well, there's the theme song. What's your second point, quick, Steve?
And quickly, he's right on the money about the soccer programs. I'm going through this right here as a resident in Red Bank. A lot of Hispanic girls can't find anywhere to do anything.
All right, Steve, do me a favor. Get the word out because Jim is coming back next week.
I will be back next week.
And that's when we're really going to get down into the details of this. But in the meanwhile, everybody's got their marching orders for the week we need to
If anybody needs to get in touch with me again, it's jwkeady@cityofasburyparkcom or 732-988-7322.
And yes, Steve.
Hey, Maureen, great show. The guests you had on tonight were great.
Well, they're still here, and they appreciate that, I'm sure.
Well, being a former firefighter, I completely understand.
Oh, great. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. And I want to thank Ted and Angelo, myself, one more time. And Maura Martello for doing such a great job. And the underwriters for making this possible. The hardware store at 428 Main Street in Asbury Park. They know who they are, 988-3339. And the firm of Bowen Fernicola, 732-345-0600. That's Paul Fernicola. Tune in next week. It's a very important night. We will hopefully have some people from All People's Movement as well on to talk about the issues and to see what progress we've made because the deadline is, of course, Wednesday and the show is going to be on Thursday. So
all right.
Don't forget to speak up because
it's America.
Only Mr. Pixie, I'm the one to call. You need some special service.